Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. We'll be in depth on what the president's trillion-dollar plan for infrastructure really means. But first, we're getting a perspective on the president's revised travel ban order that came out yesterday. And we're taking your calls on it. Mark Krikorian is executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies. It's an organization that supports tighter limits on immigration. And he's with us today from Washington. Mark, welcome. Good to have your views on this.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome. And if you have questions for Mr. Krikorian about the travel ban or about immigration policy as a whole, here's the phone number, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at CarrieMPR. So, Mark, do you think the court decisions that stopped the original travel ban, the one that came out first 6 weeks ago, were correct? And then do you believe the courts are going to be kinder to this rewritten order? But first, I want to know what you think about the original one.
Yeah, I think the courts had no business, no authority even, to strike down or to put on hold the original order. Congress has explicitly given the president the authority, and let me read here, to prohibit the, quote, entry of any aliens or of any class of aliens, unquote. The president can't let in anybody he wants. Only Congress can do that. But Congress has authorized the president to keep anyone or any class of people out that he deems necessary.
Although when you get to the religious test, that starts to bump up against the Constitution, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't, because foreigners abroad have no First Amendment rights. The fact is the president could, if he wanted, decree a ban on all foreign-born or non-citizen Muslims. That would be a stupid policy. That's not what he's doing here. 90% of the world's Muslims are not covered by this temporary pause. But if he wanted to, Congress has given him the authority. The way to push back, of course, would be politically
for
Congress to push back. Well, he could ban all redheads if he wanted
to. But here's where we are. The courts blocked it. He came back with a new order. And I want to know whether you think this new order will pass court muster.
No. And the reason I think that is because, I mean, that was designed to pass court muster, to address some of the specific issues that came up in the litigation. But the fact is the litigation was, I mean, the court rulings were not based on law. They were assertions of political preference by the judges. I mean, there's really no other way to describe it. The highest courts that dealt with the issue was the Ninth Circuit out
right.
in San Francisco.
Right.
And they didn't even mention in the ruling the statutory basis of the order. The order says right toward the beginning, the statutory basis is various things, including this grant by Congress to the president to keep out any class of people he wants, period.
Okay, so I want to be clear on what you're saying. You believe that for the reasons that you've just given, this travel ban, the newest version of this, is probably also going to be blocked by federal courts.
Yes, it shouldn't be, but I think it will, because those decisions were not legal decisions. They were political decisions by judges.
Let me take some calls here to Brett in Mendota Heights. Hi, Brett. How are you thinking about this new order?
Great. Hey, thanks for taking my call,
sure.
Carrie. Yeah, you know, this is a super important topic. I work with resident physicians at the University of Minnesota. And, you know, in internal medicine, my specialty, in the 2016 last year's class, about 46% of the resident physician positions in internal medicine, so kind of the adult primary care doctors along with family medicine, but internal medicine, 46% of those folks trained internationally.
Uh-huh.
In our program, we have residents from a couple of the countries that were banned from the last travel ban. And the immigrant and refugee changes and this ban, however it comes across, gets, really translated across people from lots of different countries, whether they're from, you know, from the countries with particular concern or anywhere. I mean, we've had residents in our program whose families have told them that they should that they should come back home, that they're no longer welcome here in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's a laudable goal to try and make our country safer, but I really think this is the wrong way to do it. You know, refugees are among the most vetted people we welcome into the country.
And Brett, let me say that we're going to get to the vetting process here, but I think you've made a good point. I want to give Mark a chance. Don't we need these skills and the talents from the people that Brett is working with, from these physicians?
That may be a broader immigration policy issue, but how many physicians are we getting from Libya or Yemen or Somalia? These are countries where the education system no longer functions. There is no state, frankly. These are places that have in some sense reverted to the state of nature, a war of all against all. This is why they're on the list. And Iran is the one place that actually does have a functioning state that's on this list and a functioning education system and does in fact send physicians and other people to the United States. But of course, the government of Iran is sworn to kill Americans. And so the ability we have to vet people from there to access information from Iran about who these people are is very limited, and that's the reason Iran is on this list. So there are plenty, I know plenty of people born in Iran who live here now, and as far as I know, none of them are terrorists, but the question is, can we properly screen people coming from countries overseas? And these six countries in the executive order listed in there, again, just for a 90-day pause to reassess how we can successfully vet people from those countries.
Mark, here's the puzzling thing about this. If safety truly is the primary standard here, how can it be that we have a travel ban order that doesn't include a place like Pakistan or Saudi Arabia, where a lot of this radicalism that the president and you apparently are so concerned about starts, where 9/11 hijackers had their training and their organizational capabilities? How can that be?
That's a legitimate question, and the order actually addresses that. The first point is that these are the sort of hardcore, absolutely most difficult countries to do any kind of vetting from. That's why that's sort of the starting point. And Congress has designated these countries as countries of concern. But the order itself provides for the Attorney General or the Homeland Security or Secretary of State to recommend other countries to be added to this list if they find that those countries are not able
to provide information. But the president had two shots at this, Mark. And I think what we're not saying is that there is international politics at work here. We need the alliance of Saudi Arabia so Saudi Arabia doesn't end up on the list. We're hoping for help and getting some help from Pakistan on counterterrorism capability, so Pakistan doesn't end up on the list. It doesn't really make sense if you're going to apply the kind of standard that you're talking to this list.
That's a fair point, and I frankly would kind of prefer to have Saudi Arabia and Pakistan on this list as well.
Well, but that tells me that it isn't safety that is driving this policy. Is that what it tells you?
But in a sense it is, because there are different concerns you have to have with regard to safety. And Saudi Arabia, as repulsive as that regime is, does in fact work with us at the level of intelligence agencies in identifying bad guys in Saudi Arabia or bad guys from Saudi Arabia coming here. And that's what I'm assuming here. I mean, I haven't talked to the White House on this, but that's what I'm assuming their thinking is. Whereas the countries on this list either have no government whatsoever, or the governments they do have are not working with us, even to the level that Saudi Arabia is.
Or the governments like Saudi Arabia actually fund, you know, not openly, but quietly fund the very kind of radical efforts that we're trying to fight against and that they're supposedly allied with us to fight against.
Look, I'm with you on Saudi Arabia, but the fact is that that Saudi Arabia, to a significant degree, does work with us at the same time that it plays a double game.
Well, so did Iraq. And I know they're
but
they were originally on the list. Let me grab a call for you from Damien in St. Paul. Hey, Damien, thanks for waiting. What are you thinking about?
I watched a discussion with a professor from one of the universities I used to attend, and he was showing us how, while it is great humanitarianly to take in these refugees, but we're not making a huge dent in the actual refugee crisis. Mm-hmm. And his discussion was that we need to help the refugees where they are. And while I believe we need to help them, and if that means taking them in while we fix whatever issue is going on in their country, but the focus should be on making their homeland sustainable and safe for them, so that, I mean, because as much as we want to help everyone, it does put a tax on our country. And I mean, I do not vote for Donald Trump. I do not want a ban, but we do need to help them where they are, as to just move them out of the situation.
Okay. So, Mark, you hear that Damien is suggesting perhaps the kind of foreign aid or nation building that President Trump, I don't think, supports, given some of the budget priorities he's been talking about.
Well, I mean, let me make 2 points. First is, even the refugee pause here is a 120-day pause. It's just hitting the pause button. This is not a new policy. It's the opportunity to sort of take a breather and develop a new policy. That's the first point. The second point is that the way we can address these issues in the region that people, that refugees already are, isn't just through nation building or what have you. We can just do a better job of helping the UN take care of the refugees in their countries of first asylum, because we cannot and will not ever take any significant share of refugees here, considering from Syria there's 5 million people outside their home countries. And this is something I've written about some. We did some research on what it costs to resettle a person in the United States as opposed to care for them in the Middle East. And it's 12 times more expensive to bring a refugee here than it is to help them there. And my conclusion is that it's actually morally wrong to bring refugees to the U.S. except in the most extraordinary cases, because what it represents, each person who's brought here represents 11 other people who are not being helped with that money.
Mark Krikorian is with us, and as you can hear, we're talking about the travel ban, the renewed travel ban that President Trump signed yesterday. He took Iraq off that list and made some other changes to the language. Mark, and Mark Krikorian, by the way, executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies, you've referred to this as a pause and a breather for 120 days. I mean, are there things that you think the majority of the countries on this list can really do to satisfy the United States that the kind of vetting that President Trump wants will go on? I mean, what can they really do to get off the list in 120 days?
Well, it's 120 days for refugees. It's 90 days for these six terrorism-infested countries. And the fact is that some of them can't. I think Yemen and Somalia and Libya and Syria probably can't do anything about it because there's no government. Literally, there is no state. I mean, or there are several different governments all at war with each other. Iran, until the mullahs are finally overthrown and hanged from lampposts, is not going to be cooperating with us in any way. And Sudan might. I mean, that's unlikely, but that's the one place that might be more cooperative.
I do want to point out, given what you just said about the mullahs of Iran, that we have a deal with Iran that is applauded by a number of foreign policy experts that impairs their drive towards getting a nuclear weapon. I mean, they cooperated with us on that. Why do you think Iran wouldn't cooperate with us on this?
I have no opinions about the Iran deal, but there's obviously sort of a wide variety of opinions about whether this helps or not.
But you just said, Mark, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you just said that they wouldn't cooperate with us on vetting. I'm pointing out that Iran has cooperated with us on a very serious deal with a lot of implications.
And, you know, here's hoping. But the fact is that they cooperated with us on the nuclear deal to the extent they're not actually just lying about it, because we paid them giant amounts of money and lifted certain sanctions in response. Maybe they would do the same thing in cooperating in vetting. But it's good. It would take a similar kind of threat and a similar kind of sanction or potential sanction for them to even consider that kind of thing. And like I said, here's hoping, but I'm not real optimistic.
One last question here for you, and this is about the wall building. As you know, there are contractors, I think 400 and some contractors applying to build that wall. Do you think that's an effective strategy? Again, you believe, and as we've heard again, that to limit immigration. Is that the way to do it? It's going to cost a lot of money, isn't it?
Yeah, for me, the wall is kind of a lower priority issue. I'm not against it. Because we do need improvements at the border. I mean, we've got some fencing. It's better than it used to be, but it's not what it really needs to be. But there are higher priority issues, and the two of them for me are mandatory E-Verify. This is an online, free online system so that when you hire somebody, you check their information, Social Security number, what have you. You have to do that anyway, but you would verify online whether they're actually lying to you or telling you the truth. That's a voluntary system that needs to be made nationwide to help turn the magnet of jobs off that attracts illegals.
So businesses would have to step up and do what they are supposed to be doing and
they're doing it now. It's just that they look at a piece of paper. This way they would actually have to go online and check whether the piece of paper has real information on it. The other thing, just quickly, is that the majority of new illegal immigrants are actually visa overstayers. They come in legally and they never leave. And walls don't help with that. What we need is what is actually mentioned in this new executive order, which is a checkout system for foreign visitors. We check them in better than we used to. We don't check them out very well. And if you don't know who's left, you don't know, in other words, who's gone home, you don't know who's still here illegally. Those, for me, are frankly higher priority issues than the wall. I'm not against the wall. I just think everybody from Trump to his opponents, everybody's just made too much of it.
Okay. Mark, I appreciate your views and your perspective. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mark Krikorian from the Center for Immigration Studies giving us his perspective on the renewed travel ban that President Trump signed yesterday.